Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. A look today at, firstly, the 100, because of course it was the final on Saturday, which I was at, and I really enjoyed actually, both the women's and the men's final. And I've been sort of keeping an eye on the tournament overall as well, and I have some thoughts about it. And also we should mention today that the Cricketer magazine, the new issue, the August issue, which we sometimes call the summer issue, is out, has been out since the weekend. And I think the importance of this particular issue is that it really covers the breadth of cricket. So on the front cover, we have Heart and Soul, and we have a picture of Jasprit Bumrah bowling in a test match. We have someone playing in a Royal London game. We have a village cricketer playing up in the North York Moors, and we have a woman playing in the 100. So we've really covered the breadth of the game, which we've always tried to do, actually, at the Cricketer magazine. But I think this month we've really exceeded it. And we'll tell you how to subscribe to the Cricketer later. There is a special offer going on. And I'm very pleased to say we have the managing editor of the Cricketer with us today, Hugh Turbeville, who you've had sort of mixed feelings, I suppose, about the 100. We'll talk about the magazine in a bit. But I've championed the 100 a bit because I've seen the experience of the IPL and the success of that. And I've always felt that having eight city-based teams was a good idea to concentrate the talent. But obviously you, understandably, have misgivings about it because you're a diehard county fan and you see the damage or possible damage it could be creating on the county game.
Morning. Yeah, hi. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I and James Coyne, actually, I think all three of us saw the need for a sort of eight-team concentrated talent tournament, didn't we? I just thought there were less destructive, cheaper ways of going about it than having to pay off the counties 1.3 million every year. I thought they could have been taken on the journey better. In the end, actually, there was an attempt to sort of make things smoother, wasn't there? They were completely sort of left out of the process to start with, and then they were brought back in by the ECB, and people like, say, Hugh Morris at Glamorgan are actually involved in the organisation of the Welsh Fire team. But yeah, I just think it was a very expensive way of going about it, really. I think there are much cheaper ways of doing it. I think the whole thing cost 70 million, didn't it? And you know, if you work out 1.3 million times 18, it's 23 million a year. I think they could have just combined, say, Surrey and Kent, told them to get on with it, create their own team. Or they could have had an 18 top flight with a 10 team lower division. And I know the problems with that, that you'd have better players in Division 2 sometimes, or you'd have some of the inferior stadiums, you know, with poorer playing surfaces in the top flight. But, you know, there'd be ways of tinkering with it. Sorry, I'm rambling on now. But
well, no, it's fine to ramble on. I mean, in a way, it proves how difficult it is to resolve this kind of issue because, you know, there are so many stakeholders and so many invested parties that you have to try and satisfy. And in fact, I remember saying to Tom Harrison when he first took over as chief executive of the ECB, be warned, Tom, you'll never be able to satisfy everybody. You know, there'll always be people moaning, complaining, suggesting other things. And you just can't satisfy everyone. So you, in a way, sometimes you just have to go with your own hunches, which I mean, obviously, well considered hunches, and try and find a solution or some kind of remedy to ultimately sustain a game which is unsustainable. I mean, county cricket, fact, we know these facts. We've seen the budgets and the spreadsheets of all these counties. You know, counties don't make money. And unless you find a way of making county cricket more sustainable, it's difficult to see how you can continue with 18 counties, who most of whom lose money all the time. So this was Tom's strategy, you know, with others to raise significant broadcast income, extra broadcast income from a new tournament, and ultimately channel some of that money back into the counties to help them survive, you know, a few years. And then it's sort of up to them, I suppose. And hopefully this tournament will generate more income. So you're quite right. The expenditure has been massive. And funnily enough, I spoke to Tony Singh, the commercial officer of the ECB, the other day. He said, oh, you know, you mustn't just say that if you spend loads of money on marketing, it's going to be a success, because you can spend completely the wrong money on marketing and it isn't a success. So we feel vindicated that we have got the marketing right here. And the focus has been on trying to make this tournament successful. And I would say, you know, just one thing, that being at the final and just sort of experiencing it, especially the men's, but also the women's actually as well, the standard of cricket was exceptional. You know, you got four 90 mile an hour bowlers in the men's final. You got batsmen, you know, hitting the ball. Somebody, Tim David, hit the ball of Australian, hit the ball over the score box at Lord's in the mound stand and into the road. I mean, I've only ever seen that once, ever happened before, in like 40 years of cricket at Lord's. So, you know, and the quality of the fielding, you know, this absolutely outstanding. So it really has, and I mean that for the women's game as well, there was some really good bowling and batting. The fielding was slightly less good actually than women's final, but the batting and bowling was really outstanding in places. And it really does concentrate the talent. It makes you watch the game. And Mark Nicholas and I, Mark is the chairman of the Southern Braves team. And we were watching this, a spell of play in the second innings of the final, when Moeen Ali and Liam Livingstone were taking on the pace of George Garton and Chris Jordan and Timmel Mills and the spin of Jake Lintott. And they were hitting the ball miles and the ball was flying through to the keeper when they missed it. And the fielding was absolutely dynamic. And we said, this is some of the most brilliant cricket, spell of cricket we've ever seen, you know, 15 minutes worth. Well, obviously you want a bit more than 15 minutes to satisfy your appetite, but it was stunning cricket. And anyway, I you know, challenge anybody who saw that to say that cricket is not an exciting sport. So, you know, there have been things that have worked really well, and I can see a future in which more, you know, if it continues on its path, and then, you know, there are issues obviously to sort out, but if it continues on its path, I can see it generating more income through both broadcast revenue and also hopefully private investment, and even more money to help the counties who are the people who produce these players.
Okay, well, I'll take your point. So I will concede that, I mean, you can't fail to have good cricket when you've got an eight-team concentrated format like that. And they're dipping in and out and taking players out of the county game. So, yeah, it's got to be good, isn't it? If you like T20, it's got to be a good form of sort of T20. You know, I agree that the spinners of the spin attack of the Trent Rockets or the pace attack of Southern Brave, yeah, enticing. You know, very good, very good. I just think there's, I didn't see the need for a 100 ball format. Play T20, that's the world format. I didn't see the point. The ECB say they're going to sell it, don't they, to I haven't heard of any takers so far. I thought it was unnecessary, to be honest.
Yeah, fair point.
It's been tremendously alienating for County fans. It got a terrible launch, didn't it, which they never really recovered from. I think the danger is, as Richard Osman, a pointless, articulated so well in the magazine now, the kids are going to want those players now playing all the forms. So there's a clear and present danger to the counties, and present danger. I can see, though, that I've got anecdotal and first-hand evidence of interest from people who wouldn't normally be interested. My son and his friends were keen to go to a game. They wouldn't really be scrabbling to go to a blast game. People have told me that they've seen kids wearing a London Spirit shirt. A colleague has told me that his son wants a Trent Rockets shirt, never expressed an interest in a Nottinghamshire shirt. So, yeah, I agree that there's interest. It does seem to be reaching the parts other formats haven't reached, or other long-established sides cannot reach. Sad. I'm frightened for my beloved Sussex or Essex or what have you. But, the genie's out of the bottle now.
I mean, you know, I completely hear your fear, if you like. And I think the point you make there about that it's created interest amongst people who wouldn't have been interested before. That is a key thing because, you know, cricket is not in state schools very much. It's not on terrestrial TV very much. And it's just gone out of the national consciousness. And this tournament, partly through its enormous marketing spend and promotion, has raised awareness about cricket. And what it's really done is shown that cricket to a younger generation can be seen as sort of almost cool. Instead of cricket being seen amongst the younger generation, rightly or wrongly, as being a bit anachronistic or, you know, sort of boring or even unintelligible, kind of you can't understand it, incomprehensible and alienating, I think this format has been inclusive and encouraging people to take an interest and watch. And it's colourful and it's, you know, it's bright and vibrant, and the skills are incredible. And, you know, there's a bit of music that you can sort of enjoy as well. I know some people hate the music, fine, but in this sort of format of the game, I think it elevates it and it just adds something. I like it personally, and I'm a traditionalist. You know, I love Test cricket. That's my favourite format of the game by miles. But I love the way that this sort of, it's just added a bit of an ingredient to cricket to make it look cool and exciting, which a lot of the, you know, my kids' age group, your kids' age group, don't see. You know, I mean, my son who does play cricket, 18-year-old, you know, most of his mates aren't remotely interested, but some of them have sort of perked up and said, oh yeah, actually this looks quite good. If you can get 20% of those people who weren't interested in cricket before at all to think, well, actually I might have a go, or I might, you know, go to a game or something. That's effectively hoping, you know, swelling the support base of the game, which ultimately should benefit the game. So I suppose that's the bottom line, is how do you get more people interested? Well, this is one way of doing it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, son.
And obviously, you don't want to do is alienate the people already interested, which I know there was danger of that happening.
Well, they have done that. Yeah, I mean, they could have spent the money promoting an alternative tournament that wouldn't have cost so much.
That's
the argument, isn't it? I mean, I did take your point about Tom Harrison when you said about, you know, you're never going to win. It's a fair point. I was thinking, he did very well to get the BBC back at the negotiating table to be part of this deal with Sky 2020 to 2024. And then I felt the need to criticise him the other day because there's no test matches on the BBC. You know, even one test match. The Lord's Test or something, that'd be a week TV event, wouldn't it? The Lord's Test, or like Wimbledon, you know, like the Open used to be before they lost it to Sky. So no Test cricket until 2024 on the BBC or any terrestrial. Disappointing. So he did really well to get the BBC back on board after 20 years of sort of sulking, am I allowed to say that, losing the gig?
No, you are allowed to say that. And listen, I mean, I think the BBC are pretty fickle, you know. They'll kind of grab stuff if it suits them, but they're not into, you know, helping out anybody. And they'll drop stuff as soon as they'll pick up stuff if it doesn't work for them. So, you know, they just see Test cricket as a very difficult thing to schedule, actually, because nobody knows how long it's going to last. you know, you lose time for bad light and rain and all that, and it just, you know, sort of, it pisses people off in the end, the broadcasters, you know, wrongly or rightly. It, a lot of the modern broadcasters just find Test cricket annoying because it doesn't deliver the audience they're hoping for. And there are moments of absolute brilliance and drama, but they're so sort of spread out and interspersed with periods where you're staring at a blank ground because nobody's playing, that they just won't do it. And it's very expensive to cover as well.
I Sky like it because it fills the cricket channel dedicated.
Yeah, quite.
Test cricket absolutely needs to address the problem with overrates and the problem with going off because there's a light splattering of rain. Yeah. Absolutely, I agree, completely agree with that. But I mean, I'm same as you. I mean, there's nothing more compelling. Just to have it on sometimes in the background when you're working, it's just so wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, I think that was great about what was actually good about the 100 was the fact it was on every day. I loved the fact that there was cricket on every night. You knew if you switched on either BBC or Sky at 6:30 or even 4:30 because of the women's games, you knew there was cricket on for a month. And that's great.
It was on Sky,
you know, mostly. But
was there enough on the BBC?
No, not nearly enough.
First night, Oval Invincibles v Birmingham, I think. No, Manchester. Manchester Originals, yeah. Thursday night, so it was on, and I've got a group WhatsApp group with a load of local people. Mainly, they love football. We all love football. I'm the only sort of cricket aficionado, really. Maybe another one who subscribes to the magazine. But anyway, there's seven of us. And we talked about that first night, and my friend's a Man City fan. He was saying, the Manchester Originals, why are they called that? Oh, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, after that, the momentum was lost. There wasn't another game on the BBC until the Sunday afternoon. So you're tuning in every night. Thinking, I'm going to watch it on BBC tonight, and it's not on again until another week.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about them being fickle.
Is that me being hypercritical? You know,
I don't know.
Am I being unfair to Tom?
No, not at all. You know, they'll say, well, we've got, you know, lots of other things to cram in here, and you know, we haven't got the space. But there didn't seem to be much coherence to the BBC's way they showed it, really. Although it was great to have them on board, and they put in, you know, plenty of effort when they had it, and obviously it was on the radio all the time. But you do want a bit more commitment, really. I'd say that's a fair criticism.
I had several car journeys. I quite enjoyed listening to it on the radio.
Certainly, I'm just looking actually just purely on the stats here, men and women and so on. Liam Livingstone, an outstanding success, and he has to be a shoo-in for the England T20 World Cup team. I mean, Mark Nicholas and I said that he's got a swagger like Viv Richards when he walks around, and at the moment it's justified because he hits the ball incredible distances and very consistently, and he is he will be a real threat in that tournament, I reckon.
Yep. And Alex Hales provided some colourful moments.
Yeah. He did. And he actually only made 185 runs in the end, but, you know, good strike rate, and obviously got teams off to a rapid start. Pace bowling was pretty much to the fore. The top wicket taker, Adam Milne, impressive fast bowler from New Zealand, who just lit up the final, actually, with his aggressive fast bowling. And I must admit, I really enjoyed some of the bowling in that women's final. The bowling of Cap, for instance, you know, swinging the ball, and the quick bowler Ishmael as well, who was playing for Oval Invincibles. I mean, that was whizzing through, bowling, I reckon, close to 80 miles an hour. You know, she was really good. And Marianne Cap took 11 wickets, swung the ball late. There were some quite good spinners on show. Obviously, Sophie Eccleston, they're the best, but you know, others as well. I thought in the final, the women's final, there were some brilliant ramp shots and, you know, superb lofted drives by girls coming in at 7 and 8. So it's really raised the standards of the women's game and the aspirations tremendously, which is really good to see.
It is really good to see and bumper crowds for women's games. And, you know, obviously, you've got to, you know, some of them were coming in to watch the men, and then they thought, well, we'll go early to watch the women, and what they liked, what they saw. Is that reason enough to continue the men's tournament? You know, the fact that it's given the women's game a boost. I don't know. It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, people like you, and it's obviously clearly enthused by the 100, and lots of people supporting it and saying it should carry on anyway. But what I'm saying is, if it comes to the crunch, you know, it's really nice that it gave the women's game a boost, but they might, I don't know, they might have to think, is it reason enough to sustain it in itself? I don't know.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, it's happened in the Big Bash, hasn't it? Where originally they were double headers, and then now the Big Bash, the women's Big Bash, is a separate tournament, and there is talk already about the women's 100 being a separate tournament. I mean, they certainly piggybacked on the back of the men crowds-wise this year, and playing in the big stadiums, I think, was also great for them, playing on, you know, decent pitches and, you know, with proper kind of facilities and everything, rather than having sometimes to play on outgrounds. So that was a really good move. And I think that, you know, this is here to stay for 3 or 4 years at least, because, you know, that's what the tournament deal was, and the broadcast deal. So, you know, we're going to have this, but one thing I think is really important is that we continue with proper cricket, and I say proper cricket, you know, first class cricket, at the same time, because the English Test team has really suffered as a result of there being no first class cricket in the height of summer. So I personally would love to see county championship cricket played throughout the summer, and you know, at the same time as the 100. And, you know, maybe if they even start at 10:30 in, you know, July and August, and so they're finished by 5:36, which is a perfect lead into the 100, which comes after, you know, somewhere else and a different stadium, and you can watch both, one on telly and one in person. And I think hopefully that would satisfy a lot of the disillusioned members who feel they've got no proper cricket to watch, apart from a bit of Raw London. And secondly, you know, it'd help the Test team with guys who need to make runs or take wickets to get into the side, because, you know, poor Dominic Sibley and Zach Crawley, people like that who've been jettisoned from the Test team, have got nowhere to play. Or nothing substantial to play in.
It needs some Red Bull cricket, definitely. The trouble is, though, that will fans accept a depleted squad? Will Kent accept that their championship side is missing 11 players, or missing 9 players? Is that, are they going to accept that? I mean, I saw Daniel Gidney suggesting, maybe tongue-in-cheek, that it should, you know, should have an under-23 section of the county championship, which I don't agree with. That's devaluing that old classic, wonderful old competition. So I don't agree with that. I don't know, maybe a mixture of 50-over and championship. But you certainly need some Red Bull cricket, and the ECB's come under a lot of fire for not having enough Red Bull cricket in the build-up to this India Test Series,
haven't they?
Mike Hinton was pretty strong on Tom Harrison on Sky. So the cricketer, actually, we're going to keep a very close eye on the fixture list next summer. We did it before with our blueprint issue, but a couple of years ago, didn't we? We can't have another fixture list like this. I know Tom Harrison said that it's about COVID and so on, but we cannot let people like Mark Wood and Joss Butler go into a test match against India ill-equipped, unprepared. Reminds me of what Geoffrey Howe said about Mrs. Thatcher sort of breaking the bat before they went into bat with the European Union or whatever. poor Joss Butler, first innings.
Yeah.
In the first test at Cambridge. I mean, he was all at sea, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. But just one other thing on the 100. There has been talk about, or a mooted idea, to in future amalgamate the points from both men's and women's matches. You know, so if the Oval Invincibles win a game, the men's team, they get 2 points, and the women's win a game, then get 2 points, and they add them together, and that helps to qualify teams for the final. In fact, we discussed that in my kids were discussing that, but then we were wondering whether half the points for each opposite gender franchise went towards the other teams. So, you know, if the Oval Invincibles men get 2 points, one of those points goes to the women's Invincibles as well, and vice versa, so that you get a sort of a combined tally in the end, which determines which teams get into the playoffs. What do you think of that?
not a particular fan of that.
I'm not a fan of that.
You're detracting from the cricketing excellence, aren't you? You're making it gimmicky, aren't you?
Yeah, fair enough. I'm old on stuff.
But I mean, Matthew Engel came up with an idea a few years ago about amalgamating all the points for the championship 50 over and T20, I think, having a champion county. I didn't really like that then. Surely the 100 is it's about entertainment, I know, but it's about fine-tuning and improving England's players, isn't it, for tournaments like the World Cup and so on.
I think that certainly the 100 will have worked for that. And I'm just going to leave you with one little parting image, actually, from the 100 final. And that was, I was in one of the boxes in the Mound stand. I was looking towards the Allen stand, which, of course, is named after Gubby Allen, who was the famous England cricketer, captain of England, chairman of selectors and general sort of eminence grise and rather terrifying presence in the pavilion. When I first played for Middlesex, actually had a house behind the pavilion. He was he had his own entry into the pavilion. He almost felt like he owned the place, actually. And he was one who didn't want a stand built at the far end because it obscured the trees. And he was an absolute stickler for dress and, you know, behavior and deportment and everything. And I just thought, I wonder what he thinks of the big screen in the Allen stand, which is next to the pavilion, showing DJs at the far end playing that famous 10cc song, I Don't Like Cricket, I Love It, you know, which is great. I mean, it came over very well on the ground, but I wonder what Gubby in his, it would have made him turn in his grave, I think, that the big screen in his stand was showing DJs at Lord's playing a 10cc song, and they were female DJs as well. So that's a parting image of the final. But I thought it was a wonderful occasion, actually, and the fireworks actually worked, which they didn't in the 1999 World Cup final. I just thought it was a tremendous occasion and a great advert for the game, actually, in the end. And the skill levels were off the chart.
Well, we can say that as long as we don't say that it's the best time at Lord's ever, and it. And you know, the hype that it's had over during the few weeks, the best match ever, the best cricket ever, the best occasion at Lord's ever. We can say it's good, but you know, there have been other wonderful occasions at Lord's, and we don't have to overhype it. That's the message, surely, to some of the commentary team. But just quick one back on your point about the women and the men combining. I mean, what happened, say, if Southern Brave, the men, had dominated the tournament, but the women hadn't done very well? I mean, they'd be devastated, wouldn't they?
Jettison that idea, and I take your criticism of the commentary as well. I think, but our final message about the 100 is too much hyperbole. Really, let the viewers decide for themselves. Okay, as I said at the start, the new issue of the Cricketer magazine out at the weekend, the August issue, with an interesting cover, actually, which very cleverly designed by our graphic designer, Jeff Barton, who's done sterling work over the year and a half he's been with us, or probably a bit more than that now. It's almost striped, the cover, with four images, one from a test match, one from a Royal London County game, one from a club match, and one from 100 women's game. So it's multicolored and really multifaceted as well. I just like the way, Hugh, that we've, you know, and it was partly your inspiration to cover every kind of format of the game and show the breadth of cricket in England.
Yes. Yeah, so when, Simon, you told us that you were going to the North York Moors for a cricket tour, and we knew that Duncan Hamilton was going to be our star guest writer, and we knew that Vic Marks wanted to write about county cricket this month, that sort of eclectic package was building up, wasn't it? So we all came to the conclusion that we access all areas. You know, we could look at the game at all levels, really. And you were going to go to the heart and soul of the game in on the moors and saw some wonderful sort of recreational scenes, didn't you?
I was very privileged to feel, you know, you do kind of get back to the grassroots at times. And actually, it's a humbling experience to see the way clubs survive and players' enthusiasm is maintained, you know, in kind of all sorts of adverse situations. Clubs and villages find ways of sustaining their grounds and their pavilions and obviously their 11s as well, because, you know, not easy getting players these days and people moving away from the area and having other commitments and stuff. So, I mean, just to see that kind of level of commitment and enthusiasm, really, and actually skill as well. I mean, I said on one of my earlier podcasts, I think recently, that I was hit for the biggest six I think I've ever been hit for by a water worker who was playing for the Wensley. He was playing for one of the clubs in that area, and he hit me over a road and into a field, and it took us about 10 minutes to get the ball back. And, you know, just to see that kind of enjoyment of the game, actually, was great. But, Paul Edwards, brilliant writer, writing about county cricket in Sedba as a sort of antidote to the 100 was a really lovely piece. Showing the kind of tranquility and the soothing nature, as well as the skill levels of county cricket.
Yeah, definitely. He loves it there, doesn't he? He had to go back for second helpings after a taste of it a year or two before. Duncan Hamilton's writing about cult heroes, isn't he? And centering on Luke Fletcher, but also saying that he reminds him of Barry Stead.
Yes,
of your Northants. No, he was not.
So I remember him. He had a little kind of left arm, sort of little tight left arm tiger, faster bowler and sort of late order batsman, real kind of stalwart of Northants for many years.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a lovely essay, isn't it, by him? So we've got some lovely writing in this magazine. We've got Tanya Ald talking about the umpire, Sue Redfern, who's become a bit of a cult hero in her house with her kids and so forth. And a bit of a scoop, you got Sam Mendes on board, didn't you? The Oscar-winning director.
Yeah. Well, yes, I've been trying to get him for years, actually, to do something for the mag, because he's a cricket nut. You know, he's at every Lord's Test match and loves playing, has played at Lord's himself in Village Cup finals, and he's just an absolute enthusiast for the game, loves it, knows it really well. I've actually bowled to him in his personally constructed net at his house in Burford, and he couldn't get him out of the net. Michael Atherton and I were bowling to him for probably half an hour. I mean, he was absolutely loving it. And we had to, in the end, we had to sort of basically bounce him and beam him a few times, otherwise he would have been there for another hour. So he's written about Viv Richards and his sort of love of the West Indians from that era. And he's quite a lyrical writer, actually. He's writing a movie at the moment. And, you know, I should imagine that's going to be brilliant, because he's just got great imagination, and actually it comes over in his piece, I think.
I love American Beauty, and I love the cinematography of Skyfall.
Yeah,
I think the plot was a bit but the beautiful stuff up in Scotland when
that's
Daniel
right.
Craig protecting Judi Dench, and, well, he's not actually protecting, she gets killed in the end, which the plot was a bit flawed there, but anyway, I digress. But no, 1917 was an amazing film, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, to film, you know, one scene, you know, with one camera shot, and the way it was done, kind of the whole film is just meant to be one shot, isn't it, almost? Flowing sequence is a brilliant idea. So, it's great to have him. Great to have him in the magazine. I'll tell you what, one person I quite enjoyed interviewing was Dinesh Kartik, who I think has made real waves, actually, on commentary. He's one person you don't need to tell him about too much hyperbole, because he's very balanced, I think. He gets the tempo and the sort of levels of excitement of a match, and I think reflects that really well, and gives lots of interesting insights into players, and very observant, a real enthusiast. You know, he's not there for show. He's there because he cares, actually. He loves cricket so much. Yeah. And actually, quite a lot of, you know, I there aren't enough commentators like that. You know, some commentators have sort of got there because of who they are, but someone like that, he wanted to do it. He wanted to, and he's learned so much about the game from being a commentator for a few months as well, he says. So he may come back as a better player in the next bit of the IPL.
He seized his chance, hasn't he? Absolutely. He said in your interview that he wasn't sure whether to do it with Sky, because he didn't want people to think that he had packed up as a player. But he's absolutely embraced his chance, hasn't he?
And the other one, the other interview that I quite enjoyed, and I know it's partly because I did it, but Ali Brown, who I don't know, we've sort of been trying to get for a while, the guy who holds the record for the highest score in an List A match, 268 for Surrey against Glamorgan in 2002. And I just like his attitude to cricket. Fearlessness is something that he always believed in, and took his chance, you know, was a very chancy player, took risks, but often came off, and should have played more than his 16 one-day internationals. But England just didn't have the attitude that he had at the time. They were a more safety first approach in ODIs. So he kept getting picked and getting dropped again. And he's a great fan of the current regime, Owen Morgan and, you know, others, and the way that they play the game now with the fearlessness and the lack of blame culture, encouraging players to play their way. He was an early coach of Jason Roy, and no doubt had an influence on his own approach. So he's our whatever happened to character in this month's mag. And whatever happened to him? Well, he's now, and I think you mentioned this originally, he's now presents a show for Racing Post on Greyhound Racing. So he's really diversified.
Definitely. That's really funny, isn't it? He does that. The Greyhound track at Wimbledon is no more, of course. But
yes, that's right. Yeah, his nearest track is now Hove, where they still run.
Greyhound Racing is struggling. They need their own 100, don't they, Simon?
They need their own 100. And we have covered the 100, of course, in the mag with, you know, two balanced pieces, one sort of fairly positive and one slightly more negative. So, you know, we've tried to cover the whole gamut of English cricket in this month's magazine. It's out, as I say, last Friday. And there's a special offer at the moment on the Cricketer Mag, which is £19.21. It's in our centenary year. So the reason why it's £19.21 for six issues is because 1921 was our founding year. And if you go to HTTPS, if you go to www.shop.thecricketer.com/suboffer/centenary, I'll post this on Twitter as well. So www.shop.thecricketer.com and then shop offer. Sorry, I'll say that again. www.shop.thecricketer.com/suboffer/centenary, a little bit of a mouthful, you can get onto that £19.21 for six issues offer. And I hope you will subscribe, because we're working hard to make it interesting every month, aren't we, Hugh?
Absolutely. We do. We have.
And we've got a great team and a real bunch of brilliant writers. So join our club, and I think you will find you're enriched in your knowledge of cricket.
Decent 11, isn't it? With you and George DeBell and Vic Marks and Mike Brearley and Tanya Aldred and Mike Selvey.
Yeah, and you.
Pretty good.
And you're googly. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, yeah, so get into it. Please subscribe to the Cricketer Mag. Simon Mann and I will be back to review the first day, of course, of the next Test match. Starts on Wednesday at Headingley. Very excited set up there with a couple of new faces in the England team, potentially with Haseeb Hameed potentially promoted to open, and maybe a debut for Saqib Mahmood as well. So an interesting prospect for the Headingley Test. And as I say, we'll be there reviewing Thursday's play on Wednesday night. In the meantime, Hugh, thanks very much for your time and a brilliant effort on this month's mag. And thanks everyone for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.